When the much-awaited Queer Eye episodes set in Kansas City were released on Netflix late last week, the watch parties went into full effect, and the citywide season 3 binge-watching began. Now, Kansas City has been burned before when it comes to portrayals in national media, so I could imagine some collective squirming early on in episode 1 as the Fab Five headed to rural Missouri to meet Jody.
I love being a country girl.
Here's Tan, the fashion expert, briefing the other guys.
She and Chris went hunting on their first date and have been in love ever since.
I usually bring a gun on my first date, too.
And you don't necessarily feel a lot better when they start teasing her for all the camo she wears. But by the end of this episode, Jody and the Fab Five have connected on a pretty deep level. Here she is telling Karamo, the culture expert, about her childhood.
I've always been a tomboy. Oh my gosh. I was devastated when I started growing boobs. I was like, oh my God, what's happening, Mom? You know, I didn't have a lot of girlfriends. I got made fun of a lot because we were poor kids that live on a farm. I wore jeans that were really high. I remember being made fun of for having high waters on. And I went home and told my mom, I'm like, Mom, what's waiting for a flood man? And she goes, they're just jealous. Yet when somebody was really making fun of you, saying you're poor and stuff like that, I wanted to beat them up.
So it was your defense mechanism, part of the boyishness of
life. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's just how season 3 begins. Today's show on KCUR's Central Standard is a Screen Time all about Queer Eye. If you've been watching, we want your take. Has the show given you a new perspective on our city, the people who live here? Talk to us about the transformation that touched you the most at 816-235-2888. We'd also love to hear your critiques of the season. 816-235-2888. My guests are writer and performer David Wayne Reed. Hi, David.
Hi, Gina.
Musician and KCK native Stefan Singleton. Hi, Stefan.
Hello.
And KCUR's own Peggy Lowe, because investigative reporters like pop culture, too.
Yes, we do. Good morning, Gina.
Hi. Okay, so quick reminder, we will do our best to give a little heads up whenever there's a real spoiler on the way, but we are talking about Queer Eye for the hour, which means we are digging in. So if you have not seen this season yet and a spoiler would just kill you, maybe this is a show to catch later at kcur.org/centralstandard. So everyone, tell me overall what you thought, just like the way you'd tell a friend.
Overall, I would actually agree with you that I was nervous in the beginning when they bring on the lady who's like shooting squirrels. And you're like, oh my gosh, are we going back to rural Georgia? And are they going to make fun of us? But it didn't turn out to be that way at all. In fact, every single episode had this larger theme. For instance, that one was about gender fluidity, essentially. I mean, Jody, this woman that they transform, you know, was sort of masculine, sort of feminine. And basically, the whole theme of the whole season is transformation to be exactly who you are.
Yeah, just a person, an individual. Mm-hmm. David?
Well, I loved it. And actually, I really needed it because I'd been binging some other kind of rougher material prior to that. After leaving Neverland and Abducted in Plain Sight, I needed something like this season of Queer Eye. I thought it was fantastic. And I cried all the way throughout. And I echo Peggy's sentiments. Coming from the rural community, I loved how seamlessly they entered that community in not at all a condescending way. And I thought it really showed a good breadth and continuum of our humanity.
Stefan Singleton.
You know what? I did not want to like it. I had to be real honest.
Okay, back up. Why not?
Well, because it's the first season I've actually tuned into. I was really, when I heard it was going to be rebooted, like, do we need this? I kind of ask myself that with reboots all the time. Like, why are we doing this again? Is there a purpose for this in today? And there is a purpose for Queer Eye in today's world. I thought it was going to be a big culture vulture. I thought it was going to be super exploitive of the gay community and super exploitive of Kansas City in the Midwest, kind of like we were talking about in the first episode. But the spectrum and the nuance of that cast, and the spectrum, the nuance of Black Kansas City that they showed was so refreshing and so heartwarming, and by episode two, girl, they got me.
Okay, so tell me, you know, you were just saying that their portrayal of Black Kansas City was meaningful to you in particular.
Yeah, I really kind of super related to Jess in a later episode because I remember growing up around Black cousins and in a Black neighborhood and being told that I talked white or never feeling like I was Black enough, and then going to Catholic schools that were mostly white, you know, and then being expected to be this Black caricature of a person, being a singer-songwriter and being expected to be a rapper when people see me or to sing strictly R&B or hip-hop music. So it was really nice to see a Black gamer and to see a strong Black lesbian woman, you know, and to see that Black gamer's sister and to see the Jones sisters. Oh, my God. Yeah. And that struggle and that history. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Well, so we're going to get back to some of the characters we just heard about. And I'm guessing that the people you named are some of your favorite characters, if you had to pick.
Definitely. Definitely. I was living for episode one, actually. Episode two really got me in my feels.
Episode two is the camp counselor, right?
Yes.
The camp director.
Yes, honey.
Yeah. Other favorite characters?
I love Jess, too. So Jess is the young lesbian from Kansas City who had been adopted, kicked out of her adoptive family, who was very Christian because she came out as gay very young. And she said, though she didn't feel like she was placed anywhere because she wasn't Black enough and she wasn't gay enough. And she was just the most adorable young woman who's working her tail off in Lawrence at like a Greek restaurant. I thought she was absolutely fantastic. Love Jody, the first country lady. Mm. And oh my gosh, the Jones sisters, I was done.
Okay.
Yeah, done. Absolutely done.
That could have been an entire season on
absolutely.
The Jones sisters.
Absolutely.
Well, so let's talk about the Jones sisters because we're there. This one also made me a little nervous at first, but I ended up thinking it was amazing. This is a recurring theme in my life, I guess. It starts with the Fab Five showing up at a two-woman barbecue operation at lunchtime.
Smells so good in here.
Oh, what can we do to help you? We want to help.
Do you have a pen and paper? Can I take orders? Okay, sir, what would you like?
I want that Tuesday sausage special.
Okay, here we go, babe.
Let me get out of your way.
So I don't know about you. I was super amused seeing them like take orders and stuff and psyched about the way barbecue was being represented already at this point in the show, but still nervous at this point that maybe these guys did not get what they were walking into.
Okay, guys, we're all sold out.
Oh!
Yes! Woo!
You told me to push the rib tips. I pushed those rib tips. I thought, well, those rib tips are gorgeous.
It's that
they're special sauce, though. It's that barbecue sauce. It goes on everything. Do you sell the sauce on its own?
It got out of control, so I had to stop.
What does out of control mean?
At first, just doing 5-gallon buckets once a week.
Uh-huh.
And then, all of a sudden, too many people started ordering it. People calling from out of state. You know, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I don't have even a stove big enough to even get a pot on there.
Right. So people wanted it. You just weren't able to provide, basically, because you're already overwhelmed and this is a two-woman operation.
Really, that's right.
So talk to me about this episode, you guys. Let's really dig into this one.
Well, I thought that I, too, was worried about this whole reboot of Queer Eye because I thought, okay, in the past, Queer Eye was about the gay guys going in and changing the straight guy to make him perfect for a princess who would he then marry, which is a very straight model, right? And so I thought, yeah, do we need that again? This has changed. It's about transformation. And this episode was perhaps the most transformational in that they went in and they helped the women transform their business into a gorgeous place to go eat, but also sell their barbecue. It was in KCK. They made them feel better about themselves, too, with clothes and surgery. You know, I mean, it was huge.
Girl, that tooth.
Yeah, talk
the
about,
tooth!
Talk
when
about
she
the
smiles
surgery.
This is again.
Oh! Yeah. So this is
a lot of tears.
Spoiler alert category, but Stefan, talk about the tooth.
I mean, I can't imagine holding so much joy and so much pride and so much independence like those women have. And growing up in Wyandotte County, in KCK, and seeing and being surrounded and raised by so many strong Black women, to not be able to smile and laugh and cackle and hide behind that.
Yeah, like this is a character who every time she smiles, she sort of hunches down and covers her mouth. And they've noticed that. And so they take her to get a new tooth.
The joy, the sheer joy. Mm-hmm. That she's able to feel as a Black woman that has been through so much. Wyandotte County is the poorest county in Kansas. Like, if you didn't know that, now you know that. And so for these women to do what they do and provide for that young girl so that she can go to college and just basically put everything on the back burner.
Yes, they've been nominated by one of them. It's her daughter, and the other, it's her niece. This business has put her through college, and she wants to give them something back.
I love how it honored the family's history. You know, the father was such a huge part and inspiration for Lil and Shorty. And I loved that them being able to bottle the sauce really carries on the legend and really ensures success, you know, maybe for future generations in that family. And I loved that Karamo took their bio and made sure that was printed on all of the materials, so that wasn't lost in the commercialization of their product.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really like, I think part of, I felt there's a lot of suspense in this episode. You know, they take them to the bottling company and they don't want to, they initially are not psyched to be sharing their recipe with someone. And I can feel that, you know, like these are strangers and this is your dad's recipe. This is the key to your success, is this recipe that it belongs to you. Mm. I felt so nervous for them, but then so happy for them.
Right. And Anthony tried to get that secret. He kept saying,
Is it tamarind? Tamarind. It's tamarind, yeah.
Right? He kept trying to get the secret ingredient, and girls didn't give it up. So that part was pretty cool.
Well, I thought it was neat, too, when they drove up and only one of them knew where they were, you know, knew that this was a possibility. And they'd been reached out to before to bottle. But it was, what'd she say, sitting on her computer and didn't have a printer to print it. You know, it's like these opportunities that just kind of sit and wait. And I love that Queer Eye just kind of brought everybody up to the next level, just kind of pushed them off the cliff into their next transformation.
And you know what? Like, I may never get reparations, but girl, this episode was reparations for me.
That's such a profound thing to say.
My God, to have such a major network and such a major show focus on this story and to give these women a chance, you know, just to give them the tools. They are bad women, you know what I mean? Like, and I mean that like cool women, if you don't know what bad means, but
they are
so self-sufficient. They can do it. They just needed a little help. You know what I mean? It was, oh my God.
What caught my attention is that these were all things, none of this was like stuff that they hadn't realized would help them. It's stuff that just in the scrambling day to day to keep everything going, the opportunity to stop and make it happen, or have the funds to make it happen, and that someone can give them that space.
Mm-hmm. And to not make it seem like a charity thing, you know? I mean, they deserve that. They deserve that recognition and that opportunity, and to have Karamo speak to that as a Black man and to bridge that experience to a younger and white audience through Netflix was so special and was done so right, you know?
What did you all think about the transformation of their wardrobe, where, you know, they're working in their t-shirts and jeans, and then Tan comes in and finds ways to make them look, as he puts it, like bosses?
I liked their bosses' sort of clothes away from the restaurant, where basically they were just really nice clothes. Like, look, we're business owners, and, you know, get in line. I didn't really like the uniform, I'm sorry, with the checkered little scarf thing. No, I didn't like
it. You just
that.
Didn't like
it. I just didn't know. It just didn't feel authentic to me.
But I did appreciate the way that he talked to them about dressing what he called their curves.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely.
She was filling her oats, honey.
Uh-huh. Oh, those stretch jeans?
She was like, I might still got it. I'm wearing this to work tomorrow. I was living for her, honey.
Oh, I loved it when she was also like, how can I help you?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It was clear they felt really good about the transformation, which is like the most important part.
I think that episode really hit upon something too about being having the humility to receive help, and I think Karamo really addressed that well with them. There's a real power in being completely self-sufficient, but I think there's even a greater power in allowing yourself to be helped, and I think that was a through line for all of the shows.
Absolutely, the vulnerability of folks who opened up their lives for this show was incredible to me. I was sort of like at one point. Hey, if you knew the Queer Eye guys were coming, wouldn't you clean your house?
See, those are the episodes I don't like. Those are the only episodes I don't like when it's like you've got, you know, it's easy to root for the Jones sisters or maybe the counselor, but like when your house is just, you know, come on.
Like you're just lazy.
In disarray. And you wonder, I get worried like with these transformation shows like Marie Kondo or whatever it is, it's easy to come in and clean your house, but are you given the tools to keep it clean?
Exactly.
And I don't know.
Well, I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we are talking about Queer Eye, Season 3, set in Kansas City. The new episodes were released on Netflix last Friday, and we are gathering the binge watchers out there to talk about it. 816-235-2888 is the number to call if you want to join in. Don't go away. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about Queer Eye Season 3, shot here in Kansas City. This is part of our Screen Time series where we give people a chance to weigh in on a movie or show that constitutes kind of a cultural moment. And Queer Eye is definitely that kind of a show, no matter where it's filmed. But since Season 3 is all about people in Kansas City, clearly we have to talk about it. But just a reminder, we are speaking freely here, so consider this a fair warning about spoilers. Guests, welcome back.
Thank you, Gina.
Thanks.
So our in-studio critics are writer and storyteller David Wayne Reed, musician Stefan Singleton, and KCUR's own investigative reporter Peggy Lowe. You guys, let's talk about Jess.
Well, we talked a little bit about her already in that she's this young woman that they taught to be strong?
A strong black lesbian woman. Honey.
Right. They just kept repeating that over and over.
I think they added fabulous in there towards the end.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And she's absolutely adorable. And that they reconnected her with her biological sister. And they even went to the Midwest Genealogy Center. Who knew? Mm-hmm. I liked that a great deal.
Well, you guys, okay. So let's back this up just a second. And because I want to hear these guys kind of coming to their own understanding of Jess's plight and specifically how it fits in here in our region. So as you've said, she's a young black woman, 23 years old. She lives in Lawrence. She got kicked out of her house at 16 when her parents found out she was gay. They were her adoptive parents. And this episode is really emotional. This is Jonathan trying to wrap his head around Jess's plight.
I cannot even bring myself to understanding like what she's went through. On top of being rejected by her adoptive family, she's a young woman of color in an extremely red state, and she's a lesbian. She is an expert in overcoming adversity in a way that I will not ever know.
Talk about this setup and yeah.
For him to say that is so huge, you know, as a white man, as a white gay man, to say that he'll never understand what she's had to overcome. You know, and what she has to overcome every day, you know, and then being able to just sit back and listen to her and listen to her experience, which is so much of the intersectionality that we want as POC, especially in the queer community. And it is so hard to find here in Kansas City, to be quite honest with you, as a POC in the queer community.
Will you tell me more about that? What about that experience, that that's something that's been hard to find?
Yeah, I just feel like. And I think a lot of people are getting better about it, but everyone so many times wants to relate to your struggle and your experience. And their way of relating is equating, you know, their experience. And there's no way ever, you know, the black woman is the most disrespected person, period, in America, probably in the world. And so to hear Jonathan admit that, and then to have Karamo talk to her, to go to the genealogy center, first of all, there's so many of us that don't know our history because of slavery. And so to know even a little bit and find out a little bit of that legacy is so huge to us. And that was so huge for Jess because she had no idea. I was talking to David about this earlier, had never really been down to the 18th and Vine District.
So I'm going to jump in here. We're going to talk about this part of the episode, and we're going to hear a little bit about it. Here's Karamo showing Jess around 18th and Vine.
The Black Archives is over here, the Jazz Museum, the Negro League Baseball Museum. There's an ethnic art gallery.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
It's the 18th and Vine District. It literally is the cultural epicenter for all things African American.
Really? Wow. I've never been here. And I've lived in KC my whole life, basically, minus Lawrence. And I'm excited.
So he ends up taking Jess to an Alvin Ailey rehearsal so she can realize that she's not the only young Black woman wrestling with fitting in or meeting expectations around what it means to be Black. And here's what some of the dancers there have to say about that. This is the other part of this field trip.
In middle school, I actually went to a predominant Black school. I was always told I wasn't Black enough, or I'm like the white kid at my school because of the way I talk. It kind of made me sad and kind of made me like down myself.
I want Jess to get to a place that she starts to understand there's no one way to be Black.
I grew up in a predominantly white studio and a predominantly white school. Eventually, I just kind of realized that it's okay to love me and love my culture and who I am.
What does it mean to be Black?
To be unique.
To love yourself. To love your natural Black melanin, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, Stefan, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I wanted us to kind of hear that a little bit.
I mean, yeah, there's no one way to be Black. And that took me 32 years to figure out, you know, and I'm figuring that out every single day. And that was so beautiful to see that beautiful, young, strong, fabulous Black lesbian woman knowing that she was enough and that she was more than enough and that she was unique and it was just so phenomenal for her to have that experience. And I wish that I could have that experience, you know? So to see someone else have it was huge. And I think we need to do a better job in this city, period, of raising our awareness of Black culture here in the city, of jazz culture, of 18th and Vine, of what this city was known for and popular for.
It was so telling that this person who's never been here before is showing a woman who has grown up, a Black woman in Kansas City her whole life, doesn't know that that's there. That's telling. Mm-hmm. That's very telling.
Very. Yeah. I thought, too, and this is perhaps a step back, but whoever, and I'm saying this probably just because I am in the media, but whoever the producers are on this show and the researchers did the most incredible job. I mean, it wasn't just the Queer Eye guys that we should be giving kudos to, but the strength of the diversity of this entire season was incredible. The strength of the different places they went to Kansas City. I learned about stuff in my own town. I thought they just really did a great job. They hunkered down and really learned about this town.
Yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised at the diversity of people they made over. And we've talked about racial diversity some, but like geographic diversity, they had urban and rural and suburban, like straight up suburban in the mix. Right. The types of problems that their heroes were facing, from like a single dad who's lost his wife to this young Black lesbian who is searching for her chosen family. It is a wide range of problems that they're solving together with people and also like life circumstances.
Absolutely. I mean, they're in KCK. They're in Olathe. You know,
Amazonia, Missouri.
Amazonia.
I don't even know where that is.
I don't either. I am horrified.
I want to go,
say,
though. I love that farmhouse.
Yeah. And what they made it into.
Oh, man.
And I want that cabin that Lost Boy got when they reimagined the cabin. Oh, my God. I want that so bad.
Yeah, let's talk. Can we talk? Well, I'm about to bring in our listeners at 816-235-2888. But talk about the Wildwood season. They made over a camp director's cabin at Wildwood. I'm looking at you, David, because I feel like you're going to have something to say about this.
Well, I love that. That's down in my old stomping grounds, Lacine, down near Lewisburg, Kansas. So I had a kinship to that. And also, I had a kinship to it because I know of that person and his girlfriend from Facebook. I know them not well, but enough. So I found myself kind of rooting for him on that level. But I loved how it really helped him bring his relationship with his son to another level. And the quote, not someday, today, I think is just so powerful. Well, on the show, I think his name is Joey. He's the lost boy. And every year when he would see his son, he would drive his son back to Michigan, where I think the son resides when he's not with his dad. And they would drive by all of these points of interest. And instead of pulling in, it'd be like, you know, someday we will do that. And the show really brought into his attention that there might not be a someday. That someday is today. And what a great reminder of carpe diem.
And they painted that
on the paddle on an the oar. Canoe paddle. Yeah.
They were also very diplomatic in saying, honey, you need to take more showers. you need to clean this up a little bit. Yeah. And I thought they were very kind in doing that.
Well, and I love the look. I think there's a meme already circulating about find someone who looks at you like, what was it? What did Jonathan Van Ness say? Like, you're a full box of Pop-Tarts or something. Like, talking about his girlfriend looked at him like that. And it was so sweet. You see how those transformations transform others, which I think is so incredible. It's not just the hero, I think is what they call them.
Yeah, just the way that it inspires the people around them, or the way, well, particularly, it did seem like another recurring theme this season is that a lot of the people have children, and it's like, we're not just going to do this for you, we're going to do this for your kid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With the exception of that little girl that they moved out of the master bedroom.
They
girl,
put her back in her
go. You gotta go downstairs, girl. She thought she
get
ran
downstairs,
the show.
Sassy.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Let's talk to our listeners at 816-235-2888. We're talking about the Queer Eye season filmed in Kansas City that has just been released, and a lot of people were binge-watching this weekend. Kristen on the South Plaza is ready to talk to us. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Tina.
What do you want to share?
I wanted to say that I watched the show when it first came out in around 2003. And at the time, the whole word queer was kind of an offense or derogatory term. And the fact that they took this show and that the stations let them take that name, they took that name back and used it and embraced it and then got everyone to fall in love with them. And large straight community. It used to be Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. That was the name of the show because they really only took straight men and did this for them. This may be a stretch, but I truly believe that it was a launching point for changing and embracing, the homosexuality throughout the nation, and the gay culture and community has taken huge steps since then. And I'm going to say that I think part of it is in their embracing this term and taking this term and turning this term around.
I'm curious if our panel agrees with that about sort of a cultural flashpoint around the word queer. And that having the level of significance that Kristen seems to feel it does.
Well, since 2003, I think a lot has changed. You know, in 2003, I think it was LGBT. And now, you know, there are more letters, more variations. And I think it's a way of positively reclaiming what was once derogatory. And that's not a first, you know, even going back to Nazi Germany and the pink triangles that labeled homosexual inmates in the concentration camps, that was turned upside down and reclaimed. And I think it does it in the same way. And like Kristen said, it was Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, for as if we are subservient to help lift straight guys up. And no offense to all the straight guys out, but you've been lifted up long enough. We can easily drop you off and be our own Queer Eye without you doing something for you or on behalf of you. We don't need you.
I also had a friend who was also very offended by the concept that, like, after that, he seemed to feel that people felt they had permission to expect him to, like, be an unofficial home decor expert or something. And he was like, I'm not. Stop. What?
I got called. I got called Karamo yesterday.
What?
Walking around on St. Patrick's Day. Someone thought they were being really funny. Mm-mm. And I had to, like, walk away from the situation. And so, like, It's just really, that was one of my worries, like, when this launched, you know? Like, I'm glad that I saw it through and that I watched this season, that it surprised me the way that it did. But, I mean, that still exists out there. Yeah, like, people expect us to be the best gay friend, and they have all these connotations of what that means. Mm-hmm. You know, like, maybe I'm super prissy and I say, yes, girl, all the time. And, like, I say, no, girl, don't wear that. You know, like, there's all these, like, crazy things that people have in their heads about what gay means and what queer means. And so I'm actually really happy with the representation that they show. I'm happy that there's a Bobby and a Jonathan and a Karamo and a Tan. And, you know, all of those characters, you know, are so nuanced in spectrum. So.
And that just, so it does feel to you like that represents a range of what it can mean?
Definitely. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be able to represent every single thing right. that we are, but I feel like it's definitely a great representation. Yeah, definitely.
Go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it was Karamo who took, what was her name? Jamie, the hunter?
Jody.
And brought her into this circle of women. And he even said, I can tell you all about, you know, what it means to be a woman, but it doesn't mean anything coming from me. And so I really appreciated how the Queer Eye guys realized, like Jonathan said before, too, you know, realized where their place was.
Yeah, they did. They put their recognized
privilege where their
on the
privilege
table.
Was. Mm-hmm. Right.
Peggy, what did you think looking at that scene where Jody was surrounded by other women?
Okay, it made me really nervous because I just thought, if that was me, well, first of all, they did it because she didn't have female friends. She's always been a tomboy, and she surrounded herself with men all her life. So they wanted to provide some women energy and help for her. And you're right, the Queer Eye guys needed to step back at that point. I have a ton of female friends, so I don't need to do that. So I was a little like, it kind of hurt my stomach. But she was all in.
Yeah.
And Jody made it work. I mean, she connected with every single woman, and they gave each of their different versions. And there were some girly girls, and then there was a really butch lesbian. And then there was a black woman, and then there was an Asian woman. I mean, mm-hmm. they really gave such great different perspectives. And so it worked out okay. My stomach quit being nervous.
Mine did, too. I was a little nervous, too, because I also, you know, being surrounded by random women isn't a yeah. replacement for having yeah. friends. And so I was nervous about that. But it seemed like what she was sort of, like, hungry for was a more complicated idea of what it could mean to be a woman so that she wouldn't be so scared to explore that side of herself.
Absolutely. And that episode really did become gender fluidity. You're not male, you're not female, you're Jody.
Yeah, you're exactly you're human. Who. Yeah.
Let's talk to Ellen. Ellen is calling us from Leawood at 816-235-2888. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Gina. Love your show. Love the interviews that you do.
Thank you.
Queer Eye, my daughter and I have watched it since the first season it came out. We've watched all the seasons. We've binged it all. And we were so excited for them to be in Kansas City and just kept seeing how proud we were of this city that we live in and kind of how they showcased it and how kind they were about the things that they said, you know, in interviews afterwards. So that was exciting. The woman on your panel that talked about the people behind the scene, my daughter actually nominated somebody to be in it, and she didn't get selected, or he didn't get selected. But the amount of thorough interviewing and things that they did to get to the selection process was really impressive. One of the things I really liked about the season is what they said that I think they do all the time is where they say, you met me where I was, you know, and then kind of walked with me instead of trying to get me someplace. And I think, you know, in terms of just all of our interaction with people, and being more tolerant and having more acceptance, that kind of meeting people where they are. I really appreciated that message. And I appreciated, you know, things like the acceptance of, I kind of thought my stomach hurt when they started to talk about guns and what's your thought on guns and I thought, oh gosh, this could derail so easily in terms of people's views on guns. And just having an open conversation about things where you don't always have to agree, but that you can try and listen for places of agreement. I think that's a great message that this show gives, you know, in terms of the folks that they go out and meet with.
Well, Ellen, thank you so much for that call.
One last thing.
Yes.
It was hard for me to hear. I think your panel's great. I think I respect all of you and what you've said. But to talk about cleaning up your house before people get there, you know, and you guys know this, you probably know more than I do, but, you know, people who have depression, they can't always just do that. They can't always just clean their house. And that's part of why they need people like the Queer Eye and other people to come in for them. So that was just one closing comment, and thanks for your show.
Okay, thank you, Ellen. So I think what we were talking about is that there was sort of a range of economic situations, basically, of the what they call heroes, the people they transform or help to transform, really. Some of the homes are very nice homes, and people have resources and are, for one reason or another, not caring for themselves or their living spaces. Let's dig a little deeper in that. I think that David, you were the one who kind of brought that up, so I'll let you
jump
in.
Well, I apologize, and I'm probably going to be hypocritical, because what I wanted to say too is, like, they don't make assumptions. Going back to Jody and the Hunter, I liked how you don't make assumptions about her ruralness as much as you don't make assumptions about Jess and Lawrence, that she would only listen to maybe lumberjack lesbian music. You know, she loves rock and roll music. And, you know, it reminds me that we need to think on a more personal level than on a level of demographics. And I, with that said, I apologize for any comment about a dirty house. I recognize that that can be a symptom of a much greater problem.
Actually, that was me too. I'm going to cop to that. And I'm sorry, Ellen, I've offended you. And because I said that they should clean their house, and Ellen's right. I mean, if you're depressed, you can't get out of bed. Mm-hmm. And that was the truth of that hero. He had lost his job. He was having trouble thinking about becoming a father, I think. It was that episode, right? Mm-hmm. And so Ellen's right. And we
Well, and it's about what we say to ourselves, too. One of the most impactful moments of the entire show that I just caught this morning, actually, was when Karamo took the guy into the dance studio and played for him how he talked to himself, and then had him stand in front of the mirror.
Okay, hold on. Okay, total spoiler alert here, but, like, let's set that up and explain what you're talking about. Explain who this character is and what this moment is.
So it was this guy who I think he might have had a home in disarray. They were getting ready for the baby. Was that right?
No, a wedding.
A wedding. The wedding.
That's right. The wedding was that week.
And
right?
So I'll set this up kind of just... to be really, like, here are the pieces I think people need to know, that this guy is going to get married to this woman he's been with for a long time. They're raising three children together. Two of them are his biological children. They've been together a long, long time, and they haven't gotten married yet. And you kind of learn that he doesn't have a model for what a marriage really is, because he was in many different foster care situations. And that he's really had a rough go of it in his life, and that he might have some trepidation about, like, what is the family unit, even though he's kind of been living it.
And so Karamo takes him to a dance studio and plays for him the conversation that he had with them when they first met him, and he was making all these self-deprecating comments about himself, and playing that back to him and making him hear that was this major...
It was devastating.
Devastating transformational moment. And then he had him stand in front of the mirror and say the things that he liked about himself. It's so easy to pinpoint all the things we hate about ourselves, but to stand in your full glory in front of the mirror bare and tell yourself what you like about yourself, I mean, it makes me kind of well up in tears just.
And he believed it. He actually believed it. Like, that truthfully impacted him. And that was beautiful. Yeah, it was devastating. You know, there's so much self-deprecating.
One of my favorite lines during that part is, I'm going to stop telling people who I am and start letting them see who I am.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Queer Eye Season 3 on KCUR Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. You still have a little time to join us. 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we are talking about Season 3 of Queer Eye on Netflix. New season came out last Friday, set totally in and around Kansas City, and our panelists are excited about it. They are Peggy Lowe, David Wayne Reed, and Stefan Singleton. Welcome back, you guys.
Thanks, Gina.
So I'm going to talk now with Karen, who is calling us from Kansas City with a little bit of personal insight on the story of Jess based on her experience. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to garner a lot of, but not every white adoptive parent does this, but I am a white foster and adoptive parent. And so I feel like I can speak to it. I can't remember if she came out and said that her parents were white, but that kind of was my assumption. I don't know, maybe not, but I do consider myself also a Christian. I ugly cried during that episode because I'm glad no one else is with me. Because I just want to throw a challenge out there to people who are considering adoption, especially interracial adoption, especially if you don't know, if you have a small child, you don't know if they are going to be gay, if they are going to be straight. You don't know that when you start out. And
you don't know anything about them. They're babies.
No, if you are going to adopt, you have to know that they are coming with their own story and their own. You don't get to say who they're going to become. And if you are signing onto that, you have got to unconditionally love them, even if they don't ascribe to your belief systems, even if they don't. How much damage are we doing to kids who have already gone through the most immense trauma a human being can go through? So yeah, you don't sign up for it if you're not going to love that child unconditionally for who they are, and they get to choose how they're going to live their life. So yeah.
Karen, you're making me want to ugly cry now.
I'm ugly cry.
Amen.
Thank you so much for that call, Karen.
Yeah, well, and if Jess is listening, just know that I freaked my husband out because I'm like, where is she? She can move into our upstairs room. Like, seriously. Yeah.
Thank you.
I have a bit of an update on Jess because I was Googling this morning just to come up with the guys' names because I forget their names. And apparently there's a GoFundMe for Jess because she had dropped out of KU and they want to raise enough money to get her back into school, which is really great. I hope that happens.
Aw. So, you know, we have talked, I think we've talked about most of the characters on this show, but I am curious whether there's someone who hasn't come up yet.
Yes. Supporting cast. What was really exciting as a Kansas City and watching it was the supporting cast. And I loved seeing Johnny Hamill and Jen Harris. And I think I saw Jen Frank, different people that I know from the community in it, you know. And it was really thrilling to see Mayor James and, you know, little pieces of Kansas City. It just made me really hometown proud.
Absolutely. That was one of my bigger takeaways, too, is that they made Kansas City so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I was watching with a good friend yesterday, and she's like, look at our gorgeous place. You know, they had the drone shots from above the World War I Museum. And I have to say, I really hope that Kansas City becomes one of these characters within Queer Eye that perhaps we will now transform the rest of the country's idea of who we are, because we looked pretty damn cool.
And not being a flyover state, not just being a flyover state and the assumptions that come with that. Right.
Exactly. I loved it. And it's really fun just going, oh, there's the crossroads. Oh, there's the plaza. Oh, there's, yeah.
Also, there's Olathe.
I was interested that Jonathan went to multiple, when he does people's hair, he went to different salons. And I assumed that all the people in the background getting their hair done as the other clients had been sort of, were like shills, basically. But I think no, because I know someone who goes to one of those salons who said that they told her just to do their thing, just to keep things going the way you usually would. It would be super weird for me to have my hair done in the background while a filming crew is there, but still, I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they went to a lot of great places that I want to go back to now. I did a rock climbing gym. Who knew? Not that I'm a rock climber, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a few actually in the city that are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Are you a rock climber?
You know what? Nah, girl. but I do ascribe to someday maybe be a rock climber. The sky's the limit.
Someday is today.
Someday is today.
Good one, Gina.
Stefan, are there any characters that who haven't come up who you want to talk about still?
Hmm. No, I don't think so. I really loved the chemistry between the guy who was getting married and Jonathan. Like, he was so sassy with him. Like, his confidence level. And he was like, girl, and I feel like a queen. He was spinning around. Like, that was, it was so cool to see the intersectionality of a straight man and a gay man like that. And that vulnerability and that openness. And they could just be people together. And that was really neat. I love the sister of the gamer guy in episode 7. Loved her.
She's gorgeous, too.
Gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that. Who these characters are. Why they left that kind of impression.
So this was a great brother-sister from KCK, mm-hmm. and they had lost their mother some time ago, I think. And the sister, I want to say it's Christy, but I can't recall the sister. She's older than the gamer little brother. And basically, she kind of wants to maybe leave town, maybe go do something else, maybe fly. But she feels really beholden to her little brother, and they live together, and she wanted to make sure he was going to be okay before she left.
She said she would move the moon for him. Yeah, and she had to take care of him when their mom passed away. And she has just tried to support him as much as she could, but not push him out of the house, you know, because she understands that that was traumatic for her, too. And so to see her be strong for him and stand up for him and be so beautiful and so radiant. And
then they have the 21st birthday for him.
Yeah.
So it was really beautiful.
You know, I'm curious, you know, we've talked about what Kansas City looked like through this lens, and it did look gorgeous. I wonder what, though, is there something that's been left behind? You know, these five guys came to Kansas City. There was a staff, I understand, a pretty robust local staff helping them out. But now that period is over. They've gone back to New York, I guess. I think that's where they live. But What remains here?
Well, I think that that's my worry. I remember in the days of like Extreme Home Makeover, you know, the team would come in and they'd build a new house and then they're off. And so it kind of becomes like a little bit of the Music Man comes to town and then then you're kind of left to your own devices after that. And I was thinking this could probably be the same, but I think they allowed everybody to level up. Everybody was brought up, and so they just brought them to a higher plane, and I think that they can springboard off of that, and especially like with the Jones sisters, leaving something for generations to come, I think is really incredible. I love the line on the Jones sisters. It's the grand opening of a brand new start. Ooh. And what you do with that is really your own, but you've been given the chance to start with a clean slate, and there are so many people that work a lifetime to even aspire to get to a clean slate.
Well, David, you know a lot of people who did work on this show.
I did, and I've seen their games level up. I think what the Queer Eye guys do is they show you what's possible. And I think there's a real ripple effect. You know, when, like, even the Marie Kondo show, everybody who I know who watched that was immediately organizing and folding their sock drawers that same weekend. And so I
think. Or in my case, turning it off because it was stressing me out.
Right. But it does turn some people onto that. And my P.S., my drawers are still neat from that weekend. But it gives you that opportunity. And I've seen it happen for my friends and how they view their lives and the aspirations that they can have. And, you know, there are some spoils, some actual physical spoils left behind. I got a leftover T-shirt and a tank top and a pair of shorts from Anthony that he was given.
Wait, I want to know how you got that, honey.
Yeah, that requires some explanation.
I've got friends in high places.
Mm-hmm. No, seriously, explain.
My friend Beth did some catering for the cast and crew, and she struck up a real good friendship with Anthony. And as they're cleaning out their stuff and Marie Kondoing their own lives, you know, they've got to move back to their places. And celebrities are given so much free, cool stuff, and they can't possibly take that. And so I ended up being the right size, and so I have a cool new tank top and T-shirt.
Okay, so we have just a little bit of time left. Is there something, was there a moment in season 3 of Queer Eye that you're going to carry with you and, like, that's going to sort of reverberate in your mind and, like, change? Are you thinking about some kind of change in yourself? Anyone here willing to share?
I rededicated myself to the idea that spandex in jeans is fantastic. Ooh. I mean, they turned on so many of those women too. Hey, jeans don't have to be, you know, hard anymore. They can expand and we all get to wear jeans. Loved it.
Anyone else?
I would say you don't build bridges by being condescending and making assumptions about people or their backgrounds.
Yeah, I would just say definitely self-assuring yourself and reminding yourself of the great things about you and believing those things was super powerful, especially someone that struggles with depression. I think the ripple effect of like seeing how a clean home can help you feel better with your anxiety, you know, like doing those things and taking those steps and really reflecting is a big part of that journey.
Well, our time is up, but that's really like a lovely note to end on, just to think about what is possible for yourself. Stefan Singleton, thank you so much. I really appreciate your perspective.
Thank you.
David Wayne Reed, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Gina.
Peggy Lowe, thank you. I'll see you in the hallway.
My pleasure.
You can grab this conversation about Queer Eye Kansas City Style later today at kcur.org/centralstandard and keep talking to us about it on Twitter. We are at KCURCST. Tomorrow, the other big thing in Kansas City right now is that we are picking a new mayor. The election is next month. And of course, a big part of making a good decision is learning about the candidates, but so is a basic understanding of what the mayor does. And that's what we'll be talking about tomorrow. KC's mayoral situation is particular, and you can tune in and find out why. This show is produced by Melody Rowell with Chris Young, Coy Duggar, Suzanne Hogan, and intern Salisa Kalakal. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Gina Kaufman.